Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Judges Bea and Bumate and I are delighted to be here with all of you today. Just a few housekeeping things before we start. We have a number of cases on calendar that are submitted, and I'm just going to call them first for the record to get them state that they're submitted. We have for those of you that are here for argument, next to your case, you have a designation of how much time that you have. If you are the appellant, that includes your full time. So if you want to reserve any time for rebuttal, that's your responsibility to keep track of your time. But if you tell me aspirationally how much time you would like to reserve, I'm looking at the clock and I watch it. And so I'll try to remind you. It goes down and then it goes up. That doesn't mean you got extra time. It means you've gone into overtime. Sometimes, depending on the cases, we have more questions of you. And obviously, the limited authority that I do have, if we use all your time, I do have the authority to add a couple of minutes if that's the case. But expect to be held to your time. I note on one of the cases, people are dividing time. And if you are dividing time, if you're the second one up, I just like to tell people, sometimes if we're asking questions of the first one, I see the second person sitting there deciding whether they should leap at the podium and pull the person down. I promise you, if you're the second one, you will get the time that you have there. If we are still asking you questions and your time has expired, you don't need to ask permission. As long as I or my colleagues have any questions, please answer them. As I'm sure you can understand, I know that you came here to say certain things, but we have to decide your cases. So I want to make sure that we have all our questions answered before such time. The first matter on calendar is United States of America versus Ellis Fulton Kingsep. 25-3528. That matter has been submitted on the briefs, will be submitted as of this date. The second matter is United States of America versus Patrick Joseph Delamoux, or 25-5558, submitted on the briefs, will be submitted as of this date. Then there's United States of America versus Junior Gafatasi Tulali. 24-6324, submitted on the briefs, will be submitted as of this date. Then United States of America versus Cornelius Leon William Smith, 25-3024, that's been submitted on the briefs, will be submitted as of this date. The first matter on for argument is the State of Alaska versus Brian Newland, 24-5280 and 24-5285. And I see as a practical matter that it would appear that, let me make sure I understand how the, that we're dividing our time. The State of Alaska is the appellant. Then, Alaska DOJ, there's 5 minutes there, and whose time does that come out of? Is that just your Appley's? And then Lloyd Miller has 10 minutes out of Appley time, is that correct? And so, Miss Alloway, you have 15 minutes total for your argument. And so, we're ready. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, Jesse Alloway on behalf of the State of Alaska. I'll aim to reserve 3 minutes of time for rebuttal. The state's appeal asks whether the Secretary of the Interior retains authority to recreate parcel by parcel the very system of trust land and territorial tribal jurisdiction that Congress deliberately dismantled in 1971 when it passed the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Consider what the tribe's position means. If they are correct, nothing changed. The day after ANCSA was enacted, the secretary could go back to recreating reservations out of public lands and taking lands into trust for the secretary's authority. And they could do this as though Congress hadn't just extinguished all Aboriginal land claims in Alaska, revoked every reservation but one, and declared a policy against reservation systems or lengthy trusteeships. And this is not a hypothetical. Within 5 years after ANCSA's passage, Arctic Village and the native village of Venati asked Interior to take their former reserve into trust. Interior declined. And that's what the parties refer to as the Frederick's opinion. And then in 1980, Interior wrote that refusal into the regulations that swept categorically. The Lands into Trust regulations, it said, did not cover trust acquisitions in Alaska except for Metlakatla. And that exclusion stood for 34 years, and Interior left it in place in 2001, despite the fact that it had revoked the Frederick's opinion. And even then, Venati did not give up. It later argued that ANCSA's silence on Indian country left its land status intact. This court agreed, and the Supreme Court reversed unanimously and held that ANCSA ended federal superintendence over tribes' lands. And the court read ANCSA by what it structurally did, not by what it declined to recite.
Well, I think this is a difficult case, but it's got not only, it's difficult because of the legal issues, but procedurally. And my understanding, and maybe just correct me if I'm wrong here, the district court vacated the Department of Interior's acceptance of the parcel of land and remanded the case to the department for reconsideration. How is that this an appealable final order? Because if the district court's remand is not appealable final order, unless the Indian tribe's sovereign immunity would bar judicial review of the agency's order on remand, why isn't judicial economy served by reserving the question to when and if a subsequent judicial action is filed? I mean, if the tribe's sovereign immunity would prohibit Alaska from judicially challenging any action taken by the agency on remand, why did the tribal sovereignty immunity not bar this action? And have the Indian tribes waived their sovereign immunity as to the action by the agency on the 787-square-foot parcel of land? If not, could they waive their sovereign immunity? So, I mean,
there's a lot. There's a lot to that question, and I'm going to do my best.
There's a lot in this little 787-square-foot parcel here.
Yes. I mean, I would agree. It's not just about, first, it's not just about 787-square-foot parcel. If the secretary has this authority, he has it for every other parcel in Alaska. So that this is a significant issue for the state of Alaska. Second, this is not a waste of judicial resources. This is a threshold question. If the court rules in the state's favor, no remand is necessary. So one of the first issues that we have to address is whether the state has standing. The state has standing because it did not get all of the relief it requested in its complaint. The state not only asked the court to vacate it for the other reasons to which the court agreed with the state, it asked for a declaratory judgment saying the secretary does not have this authority, and the court declined that. And when it issued the remand, it incorporated that legal holding into the remand.
So just help me on this, that the Department of the Interior has that they can take a position on whether they have the authority or not. And in this case, they said they don't, right?
At the start of this case, they said they do. But that's why are we here. They granted the application to take the lands into trust. They have now
they say they don't.
Now they are indicating that they don't. They have gone back to Trump 1's solicitor opinion. But we have a district court judgment that they are bound to follow, at least with this specific parcel. So with this specific parcel, the district court has said, Secretary, you have the authority to take lands into trust.
But
well, the others might.
Then, so different administrations can take different positions.
Yes.
And Alaska can take different positions.
Yes.
But we can take a position and we can tell all of you what the law is on this.
Yes.
Is that right? And that's
yes.
What you want us to do.
100%.
But of course you want us to say what you think right now, and that would be that DOI can't take the land in trust, right?
Yes. Yes.
Do we have to decide that issue in this case? Are there ways to, I mean, you know, I guess it doesn't come up in the other circuits because you're either in D.C. or you're in the Ninth Circuit, right?
Yes.
So it's not a situation where some other circuits are going to be deciding.
This is one of those very unique.
Alaska.
It's fun. This is Alaska is special. And it's, you know, it's this
very
Ninth Circuit's.
For us, yes.
You get to have us, so you get to decide these questions. So, yes, the state's position regarding, so I've addressed standing. Now I'll address the LCF factors. And this court's recently said in Alaska versus NIMS that these are considerations, none of which are a strict prerequisite. The parties are focused on that third factor, whether the denial of immediate review now could prevent a review later as a practical matter. And as a practical matter is the court's own language. And it can in this case. My friends on the other side want the court to assume that the secretary is going to deny the application. There is no guarantee that that's going to happen. The next administration could grant the application. The tribe could refile it. And then the state is in a situation where we have to overcome this court's wall of circuit authority to, or we have to rely on the tribe's willingness to waive their sovereign immunity again in the future. And there's no guarantee of that. Notably, the tribe has not taken the position that they will waive. And Judge Gleason, the district court in this case, did not retain jurisdiction over this case. So in the event that a future administration or even this administration grants the application, it's going to be a whole new administrative decision requiring the state to file a new complaint. And then we are again waiting to see whether the tribe waives its sovereign immunity or we're facing a motion to dismiss based on Rule 19 in this court's wall of circuit authority.
So it's my understanding that, and correct me if I'm wrong, that if we, I'm just saying this hypothetically, because obviously we don't, you know, you were a Ninth Circuit clerk. We don't conference before we come here. We come and listen, and then we talk about the case. So if we were to agree with you and say that DOI doesn't have that authority, is the are we going against any precedent that's in existence? Because we're obviously a three-judge panel. We're not an en banc panel.
Going in, I'm sorry, I didn't catch.
Any Ninth Circuit precedent.
Not any Ninth Circuit authority. What we have right now is two district court decisions. We have the one that's at issue in this case, and then we have the one that was at issue in the Akiyacek case, which was in the D.C. Circuit. In that case, the district court ruled against the state's view and said the secretary had the authority. The state tried to appeal, and that was mooted out. The D.C. Circuit held because Interior had changed its regulations. So that decision was vacated. It still lives out there as persuasive authority, and the tribes routinely rely on it, just like they would rely on this district court's decision, assuming this court doesn't review it.
In this case, you said the word moot. So as the district court here vacated the acceptance of the parcel of land and remanded the case to the agency, the district court said the authority was there, but still remanded it because they said, I think there was an arbitrary and capricious issue or something. So you don't like that part of the decision. But since it's going back and the agency has said they will not accept the parcel or any other land, why is this case not moot?
They have not said they won't accept this parcel. What they have done is they've gone back to the prior interpretation where they think it's not a good idea to take parcels into trust in Alaska because of ANCSA. But again, they are bound, at least to this specific parcel, to Judge Gleason's decision saying they have the authority to take this parcel into trust. So on remand, we're going to be talking about the regs that are an issue at now and whether the district or whether the agency should exercise its discretion. And we are going to be trying to apply the definition of Indian as the district court interpreted it in this case. And there is absolutely no guarantee that this agency, given all of that and being bound by the district court's judgment, is going to deny the application. They haven't said they're going to deny the application. So this is still very much a live controversy for this specific parcel.
And we could order relief by granting the declaratory judgment you saw in the district court, right?
Yes. So it's, yeah. Yes.
So you said, okay, the district court, there's a couple of ways, but it looks like the Indian tribes, in addition, are asserting that in the second sentence of 25 U.S.C. section 5129, that creates a standalone definition claim that they also meet the definitions of the first sentence.
Because
yes. The district court only went to the first sentence, right?
The district court interpreted the whole provision not to create a standalone definition for Alaska. What the district court said was that It was basically a clarification provision. If you look back in time, in 1934, the general understanding, there was confusion amongst everybody whether the definition of Indian incorporated Eskimos and Aboriginal peoples of Alaska. The state talks about this brief in its brief. There's other statutes on the book. There's the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, there's the Townsite Act, and even the Statehood Act, where Congress adds in language that says Indians includes Alaska and Eskimos and Aboriginal peoples. So what Congress was doing through that IRA was making that clarification. And remember, at the time that the IRA was enacted, the state was a territory, or Alaska was a territory. It was not yet a state. And it was the only territory to which Congress was going to apply this provision. It was clear that not all of the provisions were going to rely on Alaska. And what Congress said was, but we must clarify in this situation that Indians means Alaska Eskimos as well as Aboriginal people, but it also must meet all of the other definition or the criteria of Indian that exists in that regulation, and that's what the district court held. So on remand, it's clear, Klinkin, Haida, they are Indian, right? But now they have to show that they were under federal jurisdiction as of 1934.
So give me, just before, I know you want to save time, but just give me your wish list of what you want this court to hold.
First, I want the court to hold that it has jurisdiction. Second, I want the court to hold that the secretary lacks authority to take lands into trust. And then if you give me those two holdings, the court does not have to reach the question over the definition of Indian because it doesn't matter.
So can I ask you on that your second wish on the wish list? I mean, textually, I feel like you have a high mountain to climb because, you know, Congress left in place 5108, right, in the Alaska IRA. So how do you do that? How do you get there textually?
I'm glad that you asked me because I actually wanted to address that, and I'm happy to use the rest of my time to do that because I think it exists textually.
Okay.
So trust acquisition is the act that reunites land with jurisdiction. The tribe already owns this land. What the secretary is providing is jurisdiction. And Congress, through ANCSA, did separate those two things in its substantive provisions, not just its expressed intent. So what I mean by that is the issue through ANCSA was, how do we resolve the claims of Aboriginal title in Alaska? Aboriginal title was not just a claim that they owned the land. It was a claim that they had the right to regulate it. It included a jurisdictional aspect of it. And Congress separated those two things through ANCSA. So the substantive provisions that I would point the court to are the provisions where it extinguished all claims of Aboriginal title and all future claims of Aboriginal title. It revoked all of the reservations in Alaska except for Metlakatla, and then it declared an intent to have Alaska move forward with no reservations or lengthy wardships or trusteeships. So there is a statutory conflict between the two provisions, and that's the substantive provisions
That might be, I mean, that's one reading, but, you know, the courts have said that we should try to harmonize conflicts as well as we can, and there is a way to thread the needle for both and allow, you know, small trusts, for example, in like this particular case, but not allow, you know, the greater reservations and everything else that you're talking about in ANCSA.
Well, I don't think that there is, because I think that ANCSA was so clear when it says, hey, we're going to revoke everything and we're going to actually separate jurisdiction from land through ANCSA. But that brings me to my second point, and I want to get to it pretty quickly because I'm running out of time. And that is...
So just answer.
Okay.
Don't go into talking really fast.
I'm so excited and passionate. Okay. In addition to those substantive provisions, I would say that, yes, trust authority does exist in Alaska because we have Metlakatla. And Metlakatla is a separate and unique body because, frankly, they immigrated from Canada. They didn't have Aboriginal title, so there was nothing to extinguish, and Congress let that reservation stand. My other point that I would like to make is going back to the fact that Interior's original position immediately after ANCSA was that they could not take lands into trust. That existed. And then Congress continued to act based on that understanding. And I think the most important point that I can make to the court in my last remaining time is look at the 1987 amendments to ANCSA. There were provisions put forth by the tribes to clarify that the secretary retained lands into trust authority. Congress did not go there. Instead, what it did was it created 43 USC section 1629E, which allowed Alaska tribes to take lands, to submit lands into trust, but as state corporations under state law. They did not allow the tribes or clarify that the tribes could do that and recreate federal superintendents. And then I would, in my briefing, I rely on FDA versus Brown and Williamson, but I also would like to rely on the court's recent decision in Alaska versus United States, because I think that congressional action is a ratification of that original interpretation of Interior in 1978, as well as the regulations through 1980. And that's not the only provision. We can go through the code and see where Congress is continuing to recognize there's no Indian country in Alaska, and they're creating our very special, unique little Alaska things in the code to treat us differently.
Thank you.
Yep.
Do my panel members have any additional questions? All right. I'm going to, just because of the complication of this and all the questions, I'll give you 3 minutes for rebuttal. All right. So you still are, I saw you earlier this week, so you still would be John Luther Smeltzer, right?
That's still me, Your Honor.
Okay. All right.
And good morning. May it please the court. This morning, I'm here on behalf of the Department of the Interior. Your Honors, by agreement with Tribes Council, I'm going to spend the first 5 minutes to address appellate jurisdiction. And we believe because the case was, Interior's decision was vacated and remanded, and because the Department of Interior has changed its position with respect to trust acquisitions, that the question of authority is not ripe for review under the Yosemite Valley doctrine. And I asked the court.
Are you kind of saying mootness? But ripe and mootness sometimes are.
Not ripe because it's not ready for presentation, right? Under the Yosemite Valley doctrine.
How many years do we need to ripen this?
It needs to be a live.
Going on a long time.
Right. There needs to be a live controversy, right?
There is. I mean, they did request declaratory judgment that the government doesn't have this authority, and so we could order that, and that's a live controversy, right?
But the question is appellate jurisdiction at this
Correct.
Point.
Well, I thought you were addressing mootness.
Right. Well, I'm talking about the Yosemite Valley doctrine, which sort of incorporates.
So you agree this is a case is not moot, though.
The Article III considerations come into play when in the Yosemite Valley doctrine, in the sense that Yosemite Valley was about, and you look in the case of Yosemite Valley itself, they talk about not hearing an appeal if it's unnecessary, right, before its time, because on remand the appellant.
Question: mootness is a separate question, correct?
Yeah, we didn't argue mootness, Your Honor. We argued Yosemite Valley. To be clear, I've tried to argue Yosemite Valley. And yes. What this court looks to in Yosemite Valley, especially with respect to the exception and with respect to the third prong and the availability of future appellate review, is two things, right? The court looks first in sequential order to the remand. And the question there does the would-be appellant have the opportunity to participate in the remand and obtain all the meaningful relief?
The immediately appealable, whether or not that's immediately appealable after remand?
I'm sorry?
After it goes to remand, another decision will be made, and then if that gets challenged, will that be appealable?
Yes.
How?
If the Interior takes the land into trust, and it's challenged in the district court, and the district court issues the same decision that we have authority and approves it, then it's appealable.
Then what happens if the tribe doesn't want to waive sovereign immunity or tribal immunity?
Right. Well, we think that the issue of the tribe has waived sovereign immunity in
this
case.
Not in that case, though, right? That's a separate case.
Well, under the theory of Yosemite Valley, right, that it's a finality rule. Right, Yosemite Valley is a finality rule, and Yosemite Valley is saying if there's not an appeal now, it's because a first appeal is not available in this case, and a first appeal will become available in this case. This case meaning the case.
Does this case end as soon as it remands?
Only formally, Your Honor. In the theory of Yosemite Valley, it doesn't. That's the theory of Yosemite Valley is it doesn't. It's a finality rule. Yosemite Valley is a finality rule. And so they're saying
to get that an appeal on the remand, the tribe would have to waive sovereign immunity, correct? Or tribal immunity, correct?
No, Your Honor. We don't believe that the tribe is a required party to a land in the trust decision.
You might believe that, but our Ninth Circuit opinion or precedent clearly does believe that.
No, I beg to differ, Your Honor. There's a decision that we cite in our brief that comes out of the Northern District, California, that determined in it's the Federation or of Indians of the Grayton Rancheria, right? And that in that case, and the district court in a land in the trust challenge said that even though the tribe was required, that the case could go forward under the public rights exception. This court has recognized the public rights.
Has the Ninth Circuit approved that?
It's on appeal. It will be heard on September 1. Exactly. But it's, Your Honor, this court has recognized a public rights exception in Fair. Maverick Gaming, right? And in Maverick Gaming, this court
found that they were a required party, correct?
In Maverick Gaming, this court said the public rights exception didn't apply because the challenger there asserted commercial interest. Here, the challenger is the state. Right, the state is asserting public interest, and we think there's a different.
To concede anything, but let me ask you this: if on remand the agency accepted the parcel of land, would the Indian tribe sovereign immunity bar Alaska from seeking judicial review of that decision?
No, for the reason I just stated, we don't believe that Rule 19 would require dismissal, and we also think the waiver should carry through to the first available appeal, right?
All right, you believe that, but is there conceivably out there that someone wouldn't agree with you and they would apply Rule 19 and that the tribe would claim sovereign immunity and that it would that would be the then the that Alaska could not appeal?
It's conceivable, but the...
You would argue against that, and you think it's not going to happen,
right,
but it's not out of the realm of possibility.
It's not out of the... But it's highly speculative. And the third prong of Alsea Valley asked whether, as a practicable matter, appeal would be foreclosed. Not may be foreclosed, but will be foreclosed. Because in the ordinary circumstance,
it's a practical matter, right? That means we have to make an assessment of whether or not in the future... tribal immunity will be waived or not.
Your Honor, I don't think this court needs to resolve the Rule 19 issues in this case because they are highly speculative and because...
Okay. But the fact of the matter is you agree, though, if a court were to hold that the tribe is a required party and they don't waive, then it's unappealable, effectively unappealable on review, correct?
Yes, I assume if this court were to agree that that the public rights exception doesn't apply in that context, which we don't think this court should.
Which we've never held in any of our case, right?
You've recognized the public rights exception, and you haven't ever applied it to this circumstance, and the court in California, this court just did, and there's good reason to. And so we're asking this court to not pre-decide that decision, but we also ask this court to focus again on the first part of the equation, which is whether the state is likely to obtain relief on remand such that an appeal is unnecessary, right? And the state won on two of its claims and got vacatur of the rule, right? So the state is not injured.
Judge Gleason said you have the authority to take the land.
Yes.
But you're taking the position now that you don't.
The Interior has changed its policy about whether to take lands in the trust, and we think that's important
and
to understand.
Can change its position again tomorrow, and if someone, the next president can change that position and all of that.
Sure,
so
but this court.
We're the only ones that can keep everyone from changing their mind.
Right, but this court ordinarily doesn't issue advisory opinions to prevent future administrations from changing their minds, right? That's not ordinarily how the court operates. And
it's before us, and we can opine on what the law is.
Well, the question isn't under Alsea Valley on the remand question of what relief is available on remand. The question isn't did the state get all that it wants, did the state get all that it's entitled to. Under the APA, you're entitled to vacatur, right? They got the vacatur. You're only entitled to additional injunctive relief or declaratory relief.
Can I just is the Interior's position now that they don't have the legal authority to ever accept any land into trust, or they just don't want this particular land into trust?
Interior's position that it's highly uncertain as a matter of law as to whether
legally. I get it.
Your Honor, it's Interior's position. It's the position that's set out. We explained it in the briefs that there's high uncertainty as a matter of law as to whether land should be taken into trust for Alaska tribes. And because of that, Interior has taken the position that it shouldn't do so in Alaska, absent further instruction from Congress, which suggests that on remand, right, Interior will take the same position. The land will not be taken into trust. There's a reasonable likelihood that the state will get all of the relief that it seeks, right? And they won't be injured at all. And so then the question is,
I'm the government. I'm here to help, right?
Well, Your Honor, the state can only be injured if in the future Interior takes land into trust, in which case they'll have the full opportunity to raise all these challenges in a context where there's a ripe controversy. That's not an unusual doctrine to ask an appellate court to apply.
Well, okay, the government also can't keep time, but we've been asking questions. So let me find out if my colleagues have any more questions, because we've got you at 9 minutes now.
You've been very generous, Your Honor. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, we'll hear from the tribes. Good morning.
Good morning, Judge Callahan, Judge Baird, Judge Bumate. May it please the court. Plain meaning is the guiding light of statutory interpretation, and plain meaning resolves both of the statutory interpretation's issues today. The plain meaning on the first issue is that Congress unambiguously delegated to the Secretary discretion to acquire lands in trust on a case-by-case basis and chose not to repeal it. In ANCSA, it knew about it. In FLTMA, it knew about it. In the 1978 Cake Trust Lands legislation, it knew about it, and it chose not to repeal it. Interestingly, get back to my introduction in a moment, we didn't hear anything today about the major questions doctrine. It was all about repeal. I'll get to that in a moment. Plain meaning also resolves section. Please,
sorry, just I don't. Do you have anything to say on the appellate jurisdiction question? I mean, I think one way to solve all of this is if the tribe would commit to waiving sovereign immunity if this were ever to come up on remand.
Your Honor, the tribe's leadership isn't here today. I can't speak.
You
for
can't
the tribe,
speak.
But
okay, that's
I can say for the record that the tribe did waive sovereign immunity, and that's why we're here.
Right. But does that waiver extend to any subsequent judicial challenge to the agency's actions on remand? It doesn't.
Your Honor, frankly, I don't know if there's any case law on that question. I do need to research it, Your Honor.
All right. So you're not going to waive prospectively for them here.
I cannot do that. I just frankly cannot do that. But I also want to get to the second point, which is very important for the tribe, that plain meaning resolves Section 5129. Okay, this is the Alaska definition issue. Because that phrase, under federal jurisdiction, it modifies the word tribe. That was in County of Amador. It modifies the word tribe. It doesn't modify the word Indians. And the Alaska definition says the Eskimo and Aboriginal peoples of Alaska are Indians, not tribes. So plain meaning also resolves the second issue. And with respect to Judge Gleason, she erred in that regard. On the third issue, and then I'll complete my summary, the court's opinion, it was your opinion, Your Honor, Judge Bea, in 2018 in the Cache Dehe Band case, this is the case that involved the Enterprise Tribe up in Northern California. The court said that all the assistant secretary has to do is acknowledge that the lands being acquired are needed by the tribe and that those needs match the requirements of the IRA regulations. That's it. And the circuit deferred to the secretary's determinations. And for that reason, and again with respect, Judge Gleason erred in connection with that portion of the remand. Now, I didn't expect to be here. I thought we'd be talking about the major questions doctrine, but the state all but abandoned its main argument on appeal, and it instead spoke about repeal by implication, which it abandoned in the briefs. In the heading of its opposition brief, its reply brief, excuse me, it said this is not a repeal by implication case, and I'll tell you why that's right. First of all, ANCSA didn't repeal it. We know Congress and ANCSA knew about IRA reservations because they revoked all the IRA reservations. They could have repealed the IRA. They repealed the Alaska Native Townsite Act, so they know how to repeal things. They knew about the IRA. They didn't repeal it. Then comes the 1987 amendments. They adopt settlement trusts, sure, for the Alaska Native corporations. Do they repeal the IRA? No, they don't. In fact, they add a disclaimer saying nothing we're doing in this legislation is intended to be positive or negative on the issue of Indian country. It's a long disclaimer clause, and they've made that disclaimer many times. In 12 years ago, in 2014, the secretary amended her regulations at the time, his regulations, to eliminate the Alaska exception. 12 years ago, such a big deal. Why didn't the state sue? They've missed their statute of limitation, but why didn't they sue 12 years ago? And Congress, did Congress then come back and ratify it, repeal it? Now it's out in the open. The regulatory system is open for Alaska for taking lands into trust. And does Congress repeal it? No. I mean, it's a bit shocking to hear a concept of ratification in the subsistence case that we're all familiar with. Judge Callahan authored the opinion. Congress spoke to the opinion of this circuit in the Katie John case and said it was affirming the law as articulated by this circuit in the Katie John case. There's nothing like that.
In response to the Brown and Williamson argument that, you know, given the whole plethora of statutes working together, that we should read, you know, that part of 5108
sure.
narrowly.
Sure. Brown and Williamson. I mean, it's our best case, not our worst case. Brown and Williamson, is a cigarette a drug delivery device? Over here we have the secretary, Section 5 applies to the territory of Alaska hereafter. One is general, and you wonder how the agency could have ever imagined that a drug delivery device includes a cigarette. And over here we have Congress clearly and unmistakably saying that trust lands can be acquired in Alaska. There is not one major questions doctrine case that involved an original delegation from Congress that was clear, specific, and precise. Not one. It is not a backdoor repeal by implication. And although the ANCSA system seems to drive in one direction, there's no double clear statement rule that Congress has to say clearly the secretary can take lands into trust before ANCSA, then needs to come back later because there's this second system creeping up. There are two systems in Alaska. Let me be clear. There are four systems in Alaska. It's complicated. That's what the Supreme Court said in the Yellen versus Chehalis. This is a complicated place, but you have to harmonize them. The court harmonized them in the Chehalis litigation, the ANC system, the tribal system. They're both merged in the Indian Self-Determination Act and a raft of statutes since then. And the Supreme Court said, we can harmonize them. And we can harmonize 787 square feet being taken into trust in Juneau, Alaska, with the 40 million acres in ANCSA land, case-by-case basis, not trying to restore Aboriginal title, but trying to provide land to a self-determination contractor carrying out many, many programs.
All right, I ask a question on the 5129 issue?
Yes.
The definition of Indian. So if your argument is that statement about Eskimos and other Aboriginal peoples of Alaska is a standalone definition of Indian, if you are, in your view, if you are Eskimo or other Aboriginal people, you are automatically an Indian.
That is correct.
But who decides if you're an Eskimo or other Aboriginal people?
The Secretary of the Interior determines that. I mean, under ANCSA, the Secretary of the Interior, under Indian Self-Determination Act, under the IHS, Indian Health Service regulatory provisions, the agencies determine who is Indian, who is Indian, who isn't. The Secretary of the Interior has a process for issuing, sounds a little offensive, Your Honor, a certificate of Indian blood, but that's what's issued by the United States to determine who's an Indian, who's not.
Right, okay. And then, go ahead.
Well, on 5129, you've got a freestanding sentence. The freestanding sentence was originally in 5118. It was in the Alaska Territory section. It said, here, these five sections apply to the territory of Alaska, and for purposes of this act, Eskimos and Aboriginal peoples are Indians. And so, of course, it wasn't part of the definitional section. It wasn't anywhere near the definitional section in Section 19 of the Act. And at the end of the legislative process, they take that definition and they move it over. No legislative history, not that I would want to go there, it stands on its own, but no legislative history indicates that they intended to restrict it. And there's a deeper reason. Yes, nobody was sure if Indians included Eskimos and Aboriginals. But nobody was sure that there were tribes in Alaska, and they say so over and over, and they weren't sure that they were under federal jurisdiction.
But why would tribes in Alaska be treated better than tribes in the mainland?
Their circumstances were different, and I could play with the word better, but in one respect, Your Honor, Section 1 does do that. Remember, tribes, with respect, Your Honor, the tribes in the lower 48 have to be tribes on a reservation to get lands and trusts, so on and so forth, under federal jurisdiction. In Alaska, there's this new common bond of residency, common bond of occupation, the common bond language the Congress adds in Section 1. It looks better, but it's not better. It's just different because Alaska was different. There weren't reservations in Alaska, so they couldn't identify the native peoples in Alaska to a place the way they were accustomed to doing in the lower 48, where you identify native peoples to a reservation. So they had to come up with something new. It looks better. I don't want to quibble, Your Honor, but it's customized to the Alaska situation. We have Alaska Native peoples living in villages, not on reservations. And again, no one thinks, the Commissioner of Indian Affairs doesn't think they're under federal tutelage or federal guardianship, the two words he uses in two places in the legislative history. Alaska Delegate Diamond doesn't think they're under federal jurisdiction. And so I ask rhetorically, why would Congress put Alaska Natives, declare them—
Well, can we agree that Congress is the problem here? Because— That it's, I'm laughing, I'm saying this ironically because we're going to meet with the bar later this afternoon and someone posed some question, we probably won't answer it, but what would it, how could attorneys help judges understand ANSCA and ANILCA? And I'm thinking like, okay, maybe you all could agree and then that's how we could, you could help us, but that's never going to happen. I've been on Katie John before, I've been on Katie John again, and if I live long enough, I'll be on Katie John another time.
No, you're
on. And the Supreme Court denied review.
Yes.
Denied cert.
Was
and
right?
Part of the reason is, I think they just throw their hands up, and you're all arguing about what Congress says, but why can't Congress just, if you're, the argument's ongoing, why can't Congress just clear it up for everyone? But they won't, right? So you'll have jobs and we'll have jobs. but it is congressional, really, isn't it?
It is up to Congress, and it's not for this court to do what the state wishes Congress had done.
Well, but we have to interpret what Congress did.
That is
correct. You're asking for one interpretation. They're asking for another interpretation. And then Congress never does anything to say you're both wrong or you're both right or whatever, right?
But I would submit with respect, Your Honor, that our interpretation is the only one that makes sense. And I say that because of the Yellen versus Chehalis case. Let me be brief. In Yellen versus Chehalis, the Congress had included in the definitional provision of the Indian Self-Determination Act, Alaska Native corporations and tribes. And then it said, eligible for the special services and benefits available to Indian peoples or some such language. And it was argued, oh, Alaska Native corporations aren't subject to the special privileges and services available to Indians because they're Indians. And the court said, well, if that were true, Congress put ANCs in the definition, and then took them right out a few words later. And that's exactly what's happening here. It makes no sense. They said that result would be absurd. The state is positing that Alaska Aboriginals and Eskimo peoples were put into the act only to be taken right out because they're not a tribe and they're not under federal jurisdiction in 1934. That's what everybody thinks. So why in the world should we construe the statute in a way that in 1934, which Loper Bright tells us is the controlling date for interpreting a statute, it was adopted in 1934, why in the world would we construe the statute to mean the opposite of what Congress is trying to do, which is extend it to the territory? It not only defeats the definition, it writes Section 13, 5118, out of the Act. The Act is supposed to apply to the territory, and now it can't apply to the Indians in the territory because there are no Indians because they are not tribes under federal jurisdiction. That makes no sense.
Okay, you're over your time, but let me find out if my colleagues have any additional questions.
No questions.
Okay, so why don't you just wrap it up in 30 seconds?
In 30 seconds, Your Honor.
I already gave you 3 extra minutes, and he got a lot extra minutes. So
thank you, Your Honor.
You've had a lot of extra minutes, so
thank you, Your Honor.
Start talking.
We ask that the court uphold the secretary's authority to take lands into trust and not to manufacture a conflict between the IRA statutory regime and the ANCSA statutory regime. They have been working in harmony side by side, and 787 square feet in Juneau, Alaska.
Do you want us to just affirm the district court?
We want you to affirm the district court on that issue and reverse the district court on its interpretation of Section 5129, the Alaska definition, and also per the Cashel Dehay decision, reverse the district court's overturning the secretary's determination that the tribe had a need for this land. Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you for your patience today.
Thank you. First, I want to go back and address whether the tribe has waived sovereign immunity in future litigation. I'd point the court to McClendon versus United States, which we cite in our brief. There, the court held that even though the tribe had previously waived, it had not waived in future cases, even when it was a related matter. Second, I want to go back to what you and I were talking about, Judge Bumate, and the textual hook. In addition to what we were talking about, the substantive provisions of ANCSA, I want to go back and talk about the Native Village of Venati, because in that situation, you had the tribe, similar to what they're doing here, saying nothing changed. We were Indian country prior to ANCSA because we were a dependent Indian community and we had a reserve. Nothing changed because ANCSA doesn't talk about Indian country or dependent Indian communities. And if you go back and listen to that oral argument, Justice O'Connor is like, why couldn't Congress just talk about it in ANCSA? Still, the court ruled in favor of the state in that situation because it looked at the structure of ANCSA, not just its explicit provisions. And the structure of ANCSA was that it was extinguishing all of the Aboriginal land claims, which comes with jurisdiction. And it was creating a system where Alaska Natives had land, but it was fee land separate from the jurisdiction. And now the secretary is claiming the authority to put those two things back together without an additional congressional statement. And then I want to...
What's your best guess of why you think Congress left it there? Do you think it was an oversight, or is it just because they wanted to leave that trust for that one tribe with reservation?
I don't know, honestly, Your Honor. I think it probably is an oversight, but I think that it also makes sense. I mean, my friend on the other side says, well, Congress could have said something in 1991 when it was doing the ANCSA amendments. Well, in 1991, you had a regulation in place that said Interior doesn't have the authority, so they don't have to do anything at that point, right? And instead, they're getting requests to amend ANCSA, and they said, no, we're not going to do it that way. We're going to let you do trusts, but under state law. And then I do want to quickly address the disclaimer that also shows up in the 1991 amendments. That disclaimer says, we're not taking a position one way or the other on whether Indian country currently exists in Alaska. And remember, at the time that the 1991 amendments were being considered, you had the Native Village of Venati arguing that they had Indian country in Alaska because they were a dependent Indian community. What that disclaimer does not say is that it's not taking a position one way or the other on whether the secretary can create additional Indian country in Alaska. And that's what we have right now. And then, you know, I didn't talk about major questions doctrine. I had other things to focus on. But I do want to say one thing, EPA versus Sackett. Court has routinely said outside of the federal major questions doctrine that it expects Congress to act extremely clearly when it intends to rebalance federal and state power. And that's what we're talking about here, is that since ANCSA, the state has it has acted as though it had regulatory authority over all lands in Alaska, including those lands as ANCSA owned by Alaska Natives, and the secretary is claiming authority to change that. Thank you.
I'm good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you both for your arguments in this. Thank you all for your arguments in this matter, and this case will stand submitted.